presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
At the risk of sort of boring you, I'm going to start our show here today on what is some very well-traveled ground. Now, I don't think it's going to be boring at all, but this is certainly something that many of you are very well aware of and certainly something we have covered a good bit here. As Georgia transitions from 2017 to 2018, spring practice ongoing, and we'll have a lot on that here today and throughout the next several days here on Dog Nation Daily, we know that maybe the biggest issue that is sort of facing this Georgia team is how it transitions in terms of its leadership. I think that if you just want to crunch the numbers, the overall talent level for Georgia in 2018 on kind of a composite basis is probably higher than it was a year ago. But when you look at the key contributors and what they did on the field and sort of the intangible benefit of their leadership during practice and in the locker room and everything else, that becomes the really difficult thing to replace. This is one of those issues in which Kirby Smart sort of speaks about it all the time, and it can maybe sound a little bit like Coach speak, but it's not. We all know this is true, that the top Georgia players a season ago were also top flight leaders. We talked to them at Dog Nation Appreciation. We sort of, you know, saw that firsthand for those of us who were in the room there that night. And as you look ahead to 2018, you can't help but wonder who is the next crop of guys who are going to sort of step up and do all of this. There's no telling how many times we've dealt with this here on a Dog Nation Daily since the 2017 season ended. And the reason why we've covered it so much is because it is indeed that important. So much so that when Kirby Smart spoke with the media at the beginning of the week and at the beginning of the 2018 spring practice, he sort of laid that down right away. From almost the very beginning of what he talked about, he sort of laid that down as the thing that he's probably most concerned about when it comes to this 2018 team. Here is Kirby Smart.
I think every time you change one player or 10 players or 25 players on a team, the team changes. And there's a lot of questions about this team, and that's what I'm excited about, the challenge of finding the personalities on this team that will lead the right way, the personalities on this team that will challenge the other guys. A lot of that has already started in the off-season program, guys challenging each other, pushing each other, and we're not going to get where we want to go if we don't have great leadership. I can promise you that. And that's the biggest question about this team, is who are going to be the leaders? Who are going to be the guys that demand a lot of each other? It's not talent alone. You don't win the SEC. You don't play in the Rose Bowl with talent alone. You got to have great leadership, and that's where we've got to really improve.
Of course, I would argue that talent really, really helps, but Kirby Smart overall is right. The talent alone is not going to be enough to get it done. Did you notice the one word that Kirby uses right there, though, in terms of seeing who these new leaders will be? He didn't say, this is something that I'm worried about. He said, this is something that I'm excited about. And I don't know if that's an intentional word choice, but there's a line of thinking that would suggest that it might be. Because, listen, there is a process in place at Georgia by now. Kirby Smart's going into his third season. They've been doing Georgia football a certain way for a while now. And I believe that the way that Georgia football is done, promoting the idea of competition during practice, promoting the idea of intensity during games, I think it sort of forms a certain kind of player within the Georgia program, the kind of player that's going to embrace leadership. You know, there are guys on this Georgia roster for 2018 that will be leaders that didn't have a chance to do that in 2017 because someone else was filling those roles. But Georgia football is constructed in such a way right now where leadership is just going to be born. You know, Kirby Smart's pushing that. The message that about what's best for the program, he's explained before in the past, that sounds better when it comes from another player than when it comes from a coach, because there's this thought that, well, that's the way that coaches are supposed to talk. So I love the fact that Kirby Smart doesn't say, I'm worried that people won't do what guys like Nick Chubb and Sony Michel did a year ago. He says, I'm excited about seeing who those new guys are. And I think that same level of optimism is something that Georgia fans ought to have too. But in a roundabout way, the reason why I start the show with this here today is to sort of drill down on something that's a little bit more tangible, because we can obviously sort of look at the somewhat intangible idea of leadership, and for the most part, those of us who are fans or in the media, we don't get to see a lot of what goes on behind closed doors. We can't really measure the true value of leadership and really know who's a better leader than another. But there is something a lot more tangible than that we do need to pay attention to. And two of the guys that I just mentioned, who I think you would say they were leaders a year ago, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, there's an aspect of replacing them that's sort of flying under the radar. We know that their stats as running backs are difficult to duplicate. We know that their leadership in a lot of ways is unmatched, and that's going to be really hard to replace for a 2018. But there's something else about these two guys, Sony Michel in particular, that I think that Georgia fans also ought to be paying attention to. We won't really get this question answered during the spring, but it's a question we'll be paying a close attention to nonetheless. It sort of surfaces the other day when Kirby Smart's talking about the running backs that remain at Georgia. DeAndre Swift and Brian Herring, Elijah Holyfield, of course. Zamir White's injured. He'll be ready soon. James Cook will be here in the summer. But for the three guys who are here, who we'll see more of this spring and more of this fall, in talking about the role they might fill, Kirby Smart reminds us of just how truly valuable Chubb and Michel, in particular Sonny Michel, was back in 2017. Here's more from Kirby Smart.
Well, the great thing is we got to see two of those guys get a ton of work last year in the spring, where you guys might not have got to see them get a ton of work because you saw the two studs out there carrying it all the time. We got to see a lot of that. So we get to see DeAndre jump into that battle, that fray with those two. We get to find out a lot about who's going to be the competitor on special teams, who can replace 127 snaps Sony took on special teams. Because right now, none of those three have stepped up to the plate to say, I can be as valuable a special teamer as Sony was. Nick Chubb took every single rep last spring in special teams in two different phases. Now, we didn't use him in the season because we didn't have to. But who of those three is going to say, I can lead this spot, I can contribute on special teams, I can do every pickup right, I can protect the ball right, and I can go out and affect the rest of the team by the energy and attitude I practice with? That's what I want to see. I want to see which one of them is going to go to class the most, which one's going to have the highest GPA, because there's a great battle there, and we can certainly use all three of them, and hopefully we'll get to use Zamir and James Cook as well when they're healthy and they can go.
So pretty interesting comment there from Kirby Smart about the state of the 2018 running back situation. But did you catch the number, the stat that he gave you on Sony Michel? 127 special team snaps a season ago for a guy who was essentially a co-starter at running back? That's the kind of contribution Georgia's leaders, Georgia's star players made on special teams in 2017. And we've done a lot of this on Dog Nation Daily in terms of looking at the statistical difference between Georgia on special teams in 2016 and Georgia on special teams in 2017. Georgia goes essentially from being one of the worst special teams units in the country in Kirby Smart's first year to one of the very best in 2017. We've asked the question of, you know, how did that change? How did that happen? And maybe adding Scott Fountain in the mix as an analyst last year may have helped some. But overall, I believe it was the players that played on special teams that were a big part of that. Some of those were freshmen who were getting on the field there in special teams in a way they weren't going to be able to get on the field in offense and defense. And some of that was just like star players of other positions who were also playing special teams. You think about Lorenzo Carter's block in the Oklahoma game of the field goal. And you think about 127 snaps for Sony Michel on special teams too. That's an underrated aspect of what he brought to the table, what Nick Chubb would have been willing to bring to the table. He did that, as Kirby Smart said, during the spring. When you think about new guys and new roles for Georgia in 2018, don't let special teams slip your mind here in this discussion. Georgia won the SEC, made the playoff in large measure last season because of just how much it upgraded its special teams. And when you look ahead to 2018, who's going to fill those shoes? That's a question worth asking as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us, whether you watch us on video at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook or YouTube pages. Listen to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or check us out in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, pretty much wherever you go for your podcast. You can find a Dog Nation Daily. We're glad you have found us today. Let me also take a moment to remind you that it is a busy weekend coming up for UGA Athletics. Let's check in on that right now as a part of our Kroger Click List checklist. Of course, you know I love the Kroger Click List, the most convenient ways to shop for groceries. And a lot of you thinking about some big things going on for Georgia here this weekend, including Diamond Dogs hosting South Carolina in baseball this weekend. Georgia won its first SEC series last weekend, hopes to stay hot versus the Gamecocks. Softball at Mississippi State. Gym Dogs, by the way, in the SEC championship here this weekend, and the swimming and diving team from UGA competing in the NCAA championships this weekend. We obviously wish luck to all those UGA teams that we kind of chronicle there as part of our Kroger Click List checklist. And speaking of Kroger, save more with digital coupons. Use up to five times in the same transaction. Look for the yellow and red tags inside your local Atlanta Kroger. We're really thankful to have Kroger as a part of our Kroger click list checklist every Friday here on Dog Nation Daily. We've got a Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a couple of moments. A lot of talk to him about today on the recruiting scene for Georgia. Some really busy stuff there on that front as the G-Day visitor list starts to grow. We'll get Jeff here coming up in just a few minutes to talk to him about that. Let me, though, kind of piggyback off of what we started the show with here for a minute, if you don't mind. We just sort of addressed, you know, the notion of Nick Chubb, Sony Michel in particular, that they were obviously great leaders for Georgia, but it was more specific and tangible in terms of the impact they were able to make. Kirby Smart letting us know that Sony Michel was also a huge special teams contributor. You got to replace those snaps. And that's sort of a nuts and bolts issue that Georgia does have to deal with. And I think that's worth paying attention to. But the idea of leadership does remain crucial. And, you know, we heard from Kirby a couple of minutes ago that he's confident about new guys stepping up. He didn't say worried. He said he was excited about seeing who those guys are going to be. And after a long winter of, you know, off-season strength and conditioning, of working in the weight room and honing craft in, you know, whatever way is possible, well, some guys may be starting to step up and show some leadership capabilities, ready to sort of fill the void left by some of those guys a season ago. And earlier this week, Kirby Smart did sort of give us an indication of who maybe some of those guys might be. Here is a little more from Kirby.
Well, I think the most common thing would be say, okay, what seniors, what guys played last year? I think Lamont's done a good job. I think he's got to continue to do that. Terry has been a very quiet lead by example, works hard every day. I mean, the guy's a hard worker and people follow him. I think offensively we've got more guys in those roles than maybe defensively. I think Ledbetter's done a good job stepping up, encouraging guys, being positive and giving positive reinforcement. DeAndre Walker's trying to take on more of that role. But I think that's really where we're at now is like it's time to go out on the field and actually find out when adversity hits and you have pads on, you have helmet on, and you're tired and it's not – just an off-season conditioning program, how are you going to respond and how are you going to help the other guys around you? We need as much of that as we can get.
I think Kirby Smart mentions four pretty interesting names right there. First of all, DeAndre Walker. I think most of us would agree, and I've heard from many of you on this, Walker is likely to be one of Georgia's star players in 2018. This is a guy that had a million tackles for loss in 2017, and this is probably about to be his year where he really steps up and becomes one of the centerpieces of the Georgia defense. I think a lot of us are really excited to see that. The other names that Kirby mentions are interesting for different reasons. The idea that Lamont Gilliard is sort of emerging as one of the leaders for the Georgia offense as the center. Center is typically thought of as sort of a leadership position. But Gilliard probably doesn't get into this role as Georgia leader if he doesn't come on so strong as a player in the second half of last season. Gilliard's a guy that seemed to really solidify his spot there in the middle of that offensive line. It's kind of interesting to hear Kirby mention him in that leadership role, given, you know, I think sort of the unsettled nature of his spot as Georgia center at the beginning of the season. I think that speaks highly of him. Terry Gowan, much the same way. A guy that, you know, maybe at times we weren't quite sure how much he was in Kirby Smart's favor in year one in 2016, but he's obviously come a long way as a player, so much so that he's considered a leader right now. That's kind of a cool thing to think about. But also the other name that Kirby mentions there, Jonathan Ledbetter, the defensive end for Georgia, who is probably much like DeAndre Walker, a big part of that Georgia defense this season. To think about him being a leader sort of speaks to just how far he's really come as a player, both on and off the field. And I think that, you know, the leadership credentials are obviously well earned by this point in time. And one of the reasons that you get there with Ledbetter is because of the kind of impact he's probably ready to make on the field this season. You know, one of the things that Kirby also talked about on Tuesday was, in addition to, you know, speaking up in that leadership role, he's also led by example in the weight room all offseason long. And he's a guy who sort of physically has been able to make some changes to his body. Here's a little bit of Kirby describing just what a positive offseason it may have been for Jonathan Ledbetter.
Yeah, with skill set, I don't get to see quite as much. His work ethic I've seen grow. I think he's gotten stronger in the weight room. You know, I thought that Coach Sinclair and his staff, the weight staff we had, has done an outstanding job getting our team bigger, stronger, faster. But Ledbetter's one of those guys that really pushes the limit, and he pushes himself hard, and been pleased with where he's at.
I mean, this is also a guy, by the way, that not that long ago had maybe his football future at Georgia a little bit in doubt. He had some off-field issues and was taking care of some, you know, personal issues in his life, and for a while that became more important than football. But he's seemingly totally overcome all of that to the point now where he's able to sort of not only move himself in a positive direction, but also help other people get there as well. I think the Jonathan Ledbetter story here, his emergence as one of the stars in this defense this season, is one of the great stories potentially to be told for Georgia in 2018, and Kirby Smart also addressed a little bit of that earlier this week too.
Well, I certainly feel like he's in a good place. I mean, he's become a vocal leader on our team. He's a guy that when he speaks, people listen. They listen to people who've had hard times and fell on hard times. He can speak on an experience that not all of our players can speak on. So he's been through some really tough times, and he certainly changed the narrative on his story to this point. And I think how this season goes and how his finishing up of his Bulldog career goes will speak volumes to who he is as a person. And he can have a great impact on this team because of his leadership role and because of some of the trials and tribulations he's been through. He can speak on it and speak from experience.
Yeah, I think that's really awesome. That's a great thought to think about with Jonathan Ledbetter. He's overcome a lot. He's ready to be a great player. When you think about new leaders for Georgia in 2018, you certainly think about Jonathan Ledbetter as being a big part of that. Before we transition to Jeff Sintel, let me remind you the Dog Nation Daily is brought to you in part by my friends at MyBookie. Now, last night, sort of a shocking outcome in the tournament as Kentucky goes down. Maybe you saw that one coming. If you did, you could have been a winner at MyBookie. It's the place where the pros play. You can get your bets down on money line, point spreads, in-game wagering. It's all there for you at MyBookie.ag. And right now, it's a great offer. If you're a Dog Nation Daily listener and viewer, you can get your first deposit matched up to 50%. But you've got to use the promo code Dog Nation. The website is mybookie.ag. The promo code is Dog Nation, all one word. You play, you win, you get paid, and your first deposit can be matched up to 50%. We appreciate MyBookie and mybookie.ag being a part of Dog Nation Daily, and hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Happy Friday, Mr. Jeff Sintel. Hope you are doing well. I know you've been all over the recruiting trail all week here for DogNation.com, and I'm hoping you've got some maybe a little downtime coming up this weekend. You doing okay today?
Brandon, I'm great, man. But downtime does not exist, man. There is a major opening regional on Sunday. Everybody who is and the two-star and up crowd will likely be there at Buford High School trying to see who wins one of those golden tickets, we call them, to the Nike opening. This year it's in Texas, Frisco, Texas.
That's right.
And not Nike corporate headquarters in Oregon. So I'm looking to see, this is clearly the phase of the evaluation circuit, the showcase circuit, probably where you see a lot of rankings move up and down. There's a lot of these head-to-head competitions between these elite prospects. I think we will be there. SEC Country will be there. We might be sending a whole battalion of people to cover that event for our various websites.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of what comes out of that, and I've got a lot of your evaluations that you kind of form based on what you see there. It'll be fun to read here at DogNation.com over the next few days for sure. Let me start, though, with our conversation today on something that you wrote this week at DogNation.com. You had a chance to catch up with the Harrison Hoyas coach who's worked with Justin Fields here over the last few years, and I thought that he gave some really interesting insight into kind of how Fields is going to approach his first season at Georgia. Obviously, he's really high on what Fields is going to be able to do. But one of the things that he points out there is something that we've also talked about here a little bit on Dog Nation Daily, that you may get blown away by the arm strength of Fields. And obviously, we've all loved his athleticism. The video that we've shown of some of his games at Harrison where he's making would-be tacklers miss is always a lot of fun. But ultimately, the analysis of does he get on the field or not and how much does he play comes down to kind of what goes on between the years. Right, and how much he absorbs the playbook and how much he sort of learns about these SEC defenses. That's what helped Fromm a year ago. Fromm was really good at that. Obviously, that's a part of Fields' game that he's considering very important. And it sounds like as he approaches his first season at Georgia, that's sort of being viewed as the deciding factor of just how much of Justin Fields do we actually get a chance to see this year, right?
Yeah, Brandon, there's a lot of things to kind of talk about that, a lot of talking points to chop up there. I think the biggest things, because Fields, number one, I don't think Fields will have any trouble processing playbook, running a team, making every throw in the book, making those jaw-dropping throws. I think everybody remembers that. GIF or GIF, depending on which part of Georgia you're from, South Georgia, North Georgia, I think that Kirby gulping down popcorn GIF, That's something that'll he will definitely astound people there. He's growing. He's 225. He's as fast as Kyaris Jackson, who is a very lightning-fast wide receiver. He'll be tough to tackle. I think, I'm glad I had the ability to publish those comments from Coach Dickman at Harrison because, number one, he's a very sharp dude. He's a very no-nonsense dude. He just handled those QB1 taping moments basically like it was – just another day, and that was the fly on the wall with a really good camera. But I think he touched on something that I would even notice when I have to extrapolate the differences and, you know, why Fromm is Fromm and why Justin is Justin. And both of these kids, both of these young men are fantastic, smart, intelligent, cerebral quarterbacks. I don't think Justin gets enough credit. If Justin's 40 was 5'5", he would still be a tremendous pocket passer, a five-star quarterback in every right at the same time. But I think Dickman kind of touched on something to me that I see when I cover these two young men as well. And if, you know, this is probably the safest way I can say this, but it's kind of like Top Gun, Brandon. I would say Jake Fromm is probably more of the Maverick, and I would say Justin is probably more the Iceman. Now, Iceman is the guy that's cold, chilling, you know, cuts you to the bone, does the right thing a lot of times. Justin's probably a little bit more fun and more charismatic than that, but that's a pretty good maybe parallel between those two. And I think what makes Jake so special is composure and handling the moment, responding to adversity, but also getting guys to bleed for him, getting guys to play for him like, you know, that is their little brother, or that is the guy that no one is going to touch his jersey that day. That just comes natural to Jake, and that's not forced. And I'm not saying that Justin doesn't have that, but I'm saying that I don't know if he has it in by the bushel the way Jake Fromm leads a team and gets guys to play hard for him. I think both will play. You just got to get Justin ready to play. I know Kirby Smart will likely want to tease those defensive coordinators and keep them up at night because they will have to prepare for a package with Fields. Just going to be very interesting to see. I especially want to see how the Georgia staff will give Justin work. I kind of think they just give Justin the same type of work they would give Jake because, you know, Georgia did run a lot of RPO stuff, and Jake did find the right time to keep it on certain plays last year with his legs. You remember touchdowns against Tennessee. You remember big plays in certain ball games. I really think, because the stats are right there. You look what Jake Fromm did against red zones. You look what Jake Fromm did against short yardage. You look what he did against the most important plays of the game. And he was already as good as any quarterback in the country there. So to sit there and say, well, we'll just put the athletic 4-5 quarterback in there on those short yardage red zones, I just don't think that is really the copy and paste mentality to apply to the way Justin Fields plays football.
I love the comparison because I'm an 80s movies fan. I love the idea of Fromm being Maverick and Fields being Iceman from Top Gun. I love that. But please tell me that means that the quarterback competition won't be decided with a shirtless volleyball game. Please just at least tell me that.
I don't think so. Maybe that's a Scott Sinclair video coming a little bit later, and everybody's wearing sunglasses. We want to keep the Bulldog quarterbacks off ATVs or any other sort of motorcycles for sure.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Main thing, people, I mean, these coaches are going to figure it out. They're going to play the guy that earns the job and puts the team in the best chance to win. And I'm a big, big picture guy. And everybody's going to micro-analyze. They're already, I think every throw that Justin and Jake have in practice now will probably be charted. And that will be a reflection of the quarterbacks, or maybe it's sometimes a reflection of the receivers. It's just what it is. But the big picture here is it is a great problem to have. That I guess that the Top Gun school, so to speak, has a Maverick and an Iceman, and doesn't have maybe some of the lesser rated quarterbacks that Georgia brought in. Everybody remembers Grayson Lambert. Nothing against him, but he kind of airdrops in from Virginia. Probably wasn't going to be the starter and claims the starting job there. That quarterback cupboard was bare, and Georgia navigated some time there where they didn't have a lot of elite guys at quarterback. Rest assured, whoever that Georgia becomes the guy, or whether it's Maverick and Iceman on the field a lot for Georgia, the quarterback position is going to get a lot of great play out of it.
I promise we won't talk about Justin Fields the entire time, but I did want to. You mentioned the QB1 documentary. You had a chance to talk this week to the folks who are helping produce that. Obviously, we saw Jake Fromm in that a season ago. We're going to see Justin Fields profiled in that same series again here this year, looking back at his final year there at Harrison High School. And I don't know if you feel the same way that I do, Jeff. I think for Georgia fans, it's going to be really fun to sort of compare Fields from 2017 to Fromm from the same spot a year ago. That's a pretty interesting sort of window into his thought process going into Georgia, much the same way that Georgia fans had reason to fall in love with Fromm before he arrived at campus last year. It's kind of cool to have that level of coverage of both these guys before they enter their Georgia careers here.
It is cool, Brandon, and it's kind of funny. I think Georgia fans will enjoy reliving the field process a little bit better now, knowing that they've already skipped away to the end of the end of the narrative, and they know how it ends.
Yeah.
Then they start looking for. I know people already tell me they're like, okay, Justin had a Falcons flag and a Georgia flag in front of his house. He wore a Georgia armband almost all the time. Everybody starts looking through those things like it's Easter eggs from the new Avengers trailer or something like that. But I think the things you notice, and it's some things that already stand out, is there's a lot of similarities. And I talked to the producer, Brett Whitman. He's a very good guy. And he actually embedded himself with both families. And I thought one of the things that Georgia fans should feel very good about and sleep well at night is how the ways that Fromm and Fields are similar, and maybe those same ways we just touched on, that they're maybe a little bit different, but both come from great households, great, strong, two-parent, great parent, lots of structured families. That's probably why they, and a reason why they also turn out so well. But I just think that's a chance to see a whole lot of stuff. You've already seen Justin, I think they're on episode 6 right now. You've seen him talk to a fan in a hot tub. You've seen him at a photo shoot prior to the year. You've seen him weather some serious adversity. The latest example shows the human side of Justin, where how Justin handles failure. He has a performance. Everybody knows Harrison's record last year, so I'm not spoiling anything, but Harrison lost 2 consecutive games last year. And Justin did not play like the best player in the country on every snap in some of those plays. Of course, they faced Rome, which was a tremendous team, which will go down in history as one of the very elite teams in the state of Georgia. But you get to see Justin having trouble holding on to a wet ball. You get to see Justin not make the play, but give up a play that actually leads his team to a deficit. And he even put one loss after the game totally on his shoulders, even when his coach was saying it takes more than one play to lose a game. So I love Friday Night Lights. I love Peter Berg and the creative team that kind of marshaled up the resources to do this with a reality docuseries with a lot of these players. But I thought it was – I always try to find the funny, Brandon.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I talked to Brett, and I said, Brett, this is going to get really weird if I'm talking to you next year about another guy going to Georgia. and you chronicled another guy in the class of 2018, and he had fun with it too. He said, yeah, he says he's local. He wouldn't mind the drive from his house, but he doesn't want to get himself investigated for anything weird if the third guy he profiles in a documentary series also goes to the University of Georgia.
All right, let me try to fly through a lot of recruiting stuff here. We talked about Derek Hunter, the 4-star defensive end from Florida, on Tuesday. He tweeted some stuff about the Gators, and now you've reported this week at DogNation.com that Hunter's going to be at G-Day, and you know, you reminded folks online this week about all the things that Hunter sort of said about Georgia in the past. This sort of feels like one of those buckle-up-for-a-wild-ride recruiting affairs here. It sounds like Georgia's still very much in this with Hunter, but this may be one of those where you feel good one day, you feel bad the next. But obviously a chance to impress this young man on G-Day. You can't ask for much more than that, at least at this stage of the process, right?
Yeah, Brendan, allow me to speak Top Gun a little bit longer. This is not a practice or training exercise yet. Things do not get real for Rambo Hunter's recruitment as far as Georgia happens until G-Day, when he visits the school, he immerses himself in the program, tries on the jersey, gets himself, you know, maybe a pair of those red and black spike shoulder pads and gets the chains. I think when he hits G-Day and actually visits Georgia for the first time, that's going to be when Jester's out there and everything gets real and everybody sees what exactly is happening there with his recruitment. And I think that's maybe when we really start to know just how strong all these really nice words and very flattering words he has for the University of Georgia actually are.
By the way, that G-Day visitor list is starting to look nice. You got him. You got Trevon Walker, Helinski, the quarterback, I believe, the 5-star 2020 defensive end. You got kind of a nice growing G-Day visitor list here already. We got a couple weeks to add names to it, or Georgia has a couple weeks to add names to it. But in terms of what we see come together here, this is going to be pretty fun here on April 21st.
probably going to be the biggest one single weekend of the year for Georgia, because normally, at least early in the, especially before fall camp and the official visits happen, because again, Kirby Smart and the staff don't believe in those 40-man tours and 80-man tours where nobody gets any personal one-on-one time. They prefer the smaller groups, the elite groups, where the coaches can all spend a lot more time with the families rather than having sort of like drive-through unofficial time and everything else. And before our astute listeners get on my case about it, this would be Jester and Viper, I guess, out there on the quarry or whatever it's called, to get both of those guys involved. But I think that list is going to grow a lot. And why I started it out so early is, one, for a simple, hardworking dude like myself to stay on top of it and to put together the most complete and comprehensive list I can. But also, I think I'll be able to sort of share a story about the momentum and how a lot of these young people decide they do want to be a part of that event as well, as that thing will kind of grow and grow and grow. And remember, different rules now in the class of 2019. Official visits can take place then, and they can take place, I believe, until the maybe first or second weekend of June. So that's totally different for guys like me and everybody out there who absorbs the coverage to be writing about official visits while a lot of these players are still in their junior academic years of high school.
All right, let's try to go semi-rapid fire for a few issues here before we let you go. You wrote about Jalen Humphreys, the big defensive tackle from out of Mountain View High School. There's a lot to like about this young man. And, Jeff, for a lot of these Georgia fans who say, when's Georgia going to address its issues with the defensive line? Well, Humphreys is an example of them trying to do just that, right?
Yeah, I remember the Mountain View coaches giving me a story that Kirby Smart kind of went through their field house a little bit wanting to know about his next nose guard. So that's a little bit of swagger from the head coach already, hoping to land a very important prospect. I think defensive tackle is important. I think Georgia will probably sign at least three guys that can do that. And I don't even really count Trevon Walker should he choose Georgia. Even though he's rated as a defensive tackle, I think it would be doing his skill set a disservice if you simply look at Mr. Walker as only a defensive tackle. I think he could play out on the edge.
There's still a lot of conversation out there about the Marist safety, Kyle Hamilton. One of the things that you've pointed out is just how strong his ACT score is, just how smart of a guy this is. And, you know, for Kirby Smart, this is more than just lip service, right? I mean, all coaches say they care about academics and they care about, grades and things like that. But based on a lot of the things that Kirby said here lately, he seems to think that really helps these guys contribute on the football field. It's more than just, you know, putting the student in student-athlete, but being smart helps you be a better player, right?
Yeah. Brent, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a coach, this doesn't sound like Hollywood or whatever, but I've heard a coach say that you are the dumbest smart kid I know to some sort of football player that's got a glowing GPA but can't figure out Lucy and Roger from the defensive set, strong side and weak side or whatever. But, you know, Kyle Hamilton is a guy that plays like it. I do feel, in no uncertain terms, that Georgia is looking for those young men that are already great students because they want great students in their program. I think it means something to the staff to improve the graduation rates of the football program and not just finish number one overall in recruiting every year. I think that would be a Bulldog point of pride if Georgia's graduation rate in its football program could climb right around 70%. And you do that by recruiting a lot of guys with 24s, 25s, 30 ACTs. I mean, I can count up some lists, and there's a lot of Bulldogs that are on the program right now that have an ACT of higher than 24. And while that's not Ivy League, that's still very, very good for any high school student. And the simplest way to say that, Brandon, is a lot of college kids have to figure out time management, and they have to figure out their life like a pie chart. And the smarter they are, the smaller that wedge of the pie needs to be associated with academics and study hall and tutoring. And then more of their life can be accomplished by being a college kid, working out, watching film, getting in treatment, enjoying their college life as well. The better the student they are, that means they don't have to, the course load and everything else and the adjustment won't be as hard for them. And that also, with these ridiculously talented players, Brandon, it means that they can play right away and not be overwhelmed in their freshman year.
2019 place kicker Will Reichard from Hoover, Alabama, picks up a Georgia offer over the weekend. Or not over the weekend. He's got a Georgia offer now. I obviously, this is not in any way a criticism of him. He looks like a great player. But I'm a little surprised here. You know, I sort of like the old Kirby Smart philosophy of we're going to offer scholarships to punters, which I do agree with, and kind of stay away from, like, you know, high school scholarship offers to place kickers. Is this a change in the Kirby Smart philosophy from where he was in 2016? Because with all due respect to any, you know, great place kicker out there, I sort of like that philosophy where you earn your scholarship on campus better than the one of we're going to give you a scholarship before you arrive.
Yeah, I think there, Brandon, Kirby, let's rehash what we know. Let's hit the F5 button. Coach Smart definitely has a preference toward the elite impact special teams weapons, and that's a guy that has a huge, I love this word, trebuchet for a leg. And that's a guy that can just power that thing miles and miles down the field, obviously, figuratively there. But the one part I don't get about the Will Reichard stuff is I thought Georgia, with scholarships going to be at a premium, especially for the next 2 years, I don't really know where that offer makes a whole lot of sense other than, I guess, the coaching staff wants to protect every spot on the roster with depth for competition, but also for simply roster management stuff. I know we haven't backed you up, Brandon, as well as Kirby Smart's already looking to back up his kicker position because you would think Hot Rod has at least two more years of splitting the uprights for the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
And then they just signed a guy by the name of Jake Cremata, who was actually a triple threat. He can do kickoffs, he can do field goals and placements, but he's also a tremendous punter. He's a guy that I think will basically go head-to-head this fall camp with Marshall Long for the spot at punter. Georgia also has Brooks Boos, who's a Greater Atlanta Christian preferred walk-on, who could send it down the field pretty well in his own right. But to me, Will's a guy that does he redshirt early? Where does he help Georgia immediately, considering how well Hot Rod handles his kickoffs? Major, major sense of improvement there for Hot Rod there, but also how deadly accurate he was throughout the entire 2017 season. When you think about preseason All-SEC candidates for Georgia, Rodrigo Blankenship, pride of Sprayberry High, his name belongs in that group.
Last thing before we let you go here, Dan Lanning, the new Georgia outside linebackers coach, has been pretty busy on social media here this week, kind of tweeting out a little bit of a cryptic tweet early in the week about how a future Wolfpack member was going to be on campus this weekend. You know who you are. Hashtag new breed 19. I know that Nolan Smith kind of retweeted that. But, Jeff, a lot of these Georgia fans, as you know, it's kind of nice to see Lanning out there stirring the pot on social media and getting folks excited about some of those visits taking place to Athens this time of year. A lot of Georgia fans really like that. I'm sure you're not really surprised to hear that whatsoever.
Brandon, sometimes I apply a litmus or a taste test when I see a pretty punchy Georgia tweet, especially from a coaching staff member. I think to myself, could I picture Brandon Adams doing something like that and gleefully dropping a Mr. Burns smile as he hits the tweet button?
Oh yeah.
I think that Lanning tweet would definitely pass the Adams standard for a little bit of swag out there on Twitter. And I know you probably definitely enjoyed it, but I think, you know, Lanning's tweet obviously could refer to a lot of folks, especially a lot of folks that are going to be in town in Atlanta over the weekend for the opening. One thing that you see with Georgia is when they have the Atlanta opening camp, you see some, you know, guys, even in the nation's number three dual threat prospect quarterbacks in town this weekend.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of guys that kind of make it a weekend. They're like, okay, I know I'm going to the opening. That's on Sunday. I want to be there on Saturday, stay the night, because you got to be at the opening really early, like 7:30, 8 a.m. the next day. They just find a way to kind of also add that Georgia trip to the itinerary. And I think the program really benefits kind of, obviously not directly. It wasn't intended to be this way, but Georgia becomes a tour stop for a lot of players in the Southeast that are already in town and already in the 770 and the 404 to catch that opening.
No doubt about the Georgia program benefiting from that, and there's also no doubt that our program benefits from you here, Jeff, on Fridays and on Tuesdays when you're with us on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate the recruiting knowledge. Look forward to hearing a lot of your coverage from the opening event in Atlanta this weekend. I guess, is it Buford High School? Is that where it is this weekend?
It's in Buford. That's correct.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing more from you on that in the week to come here at a Dog Nation, and we'll catch up with you on Dog Nation Daily again soon.
All right, guys, and I got some question for the audience. Would Brandon be Slider? Would he be Goose? Would he be Hollywood or Wolfman? I would love to hear what Brandon's role would be in Top Gun with all of our earlier narratives that are in segments.
Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I guess if I was a Top Gun character, to go back to Jeff's question there at the end of the discussion, I guess Goose would probably be the closest thing I would be. You know, I end up in the bottom of the ocean before the movie's over. That may be an appropriate deal for me. But he was married to Meg Ryan, I guess, so it wasn't all bad for Mr. Goose, I don't guess. We'll transition here to our SEC Through. It is a reminder to me as well to tell you that I'm going to be back with you on SEC Country Live again Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook and YouTube page. Hope you'll check us out on that. But also check me out today. As I'm sort of recording this live on a Friday morning when the show is done, I'm going to get ready to head over to the Atlanta International Auto Show at the Georgia World Congress Center. I'm going to be there today, Friday, March 23rd, from 1 to 3 p.m. And if you're in the Atlanta area, downtown area, this afternoon, love to have you come by and see me. And if you can't be there when I'm there this afternoon, go check it out at some point in time this weekend. You know, it's a great opportunity to sort of shop and save. All the various, you know, automobile manufacturers are going to have some special stuff there. You know, new models for 2019, some great concept cars. A lot of really cool stuff in that. Great stuff for the kids. There's like some Star Wars stuff. Nissan's got some Star Wars, you know, design vehicles that are going to be there. Marvel action superhero is going to be there. I understand Black Panther is going to be there a little bit here and there. Iron Man. So it's a cool event to be a part of. I'm going to be there here today on this Friday from 1 to 3 p.m. And if you want more details on it, go to GoAutoShow.com. That's the website to find out more about the Atlanta International Auto Show throughout the rest of the weekend there at the Georgia World Congress Center in downtown Atlanta. GoAutoShow.com for more on that. All right, SEC Through time here. And boy, there has been some wild stuff on the internet over the last 12 to 24 hours. Did you see the big email dump from Tennessee? All this sort of related to open records requests. Going back to John Curry's time as Tennessee athletic director, he's replaced. Phillip Fulmer's brought in. Coaching search ongoing. And boy, we found out some pretty juicy details here. First of all, at one point in time, ousted Tennessee athletic director John Curry, apparently to USA Today's Dan Wolken in a private text message exchange, called his own Tennessee fans wackos. Wolken said that he would help John Curry try to sell the notion of Greg Schiano's head coach. That is not a good look, I think, for a national sports columnist. So I think Wolken's got some questions to answer about that. With that becoming public, obviously Curry comes across looking like a total dunce here, but we sort of knew that about him anyway. He's fired, you know, with good reason, at least from the perspective of Tennessee. But there was also some interesting coaching stuff here. First of all, Chip Kelly. It is found out based on the text of these conversations that were made public that Chip Kelly was never a serious candidate for the Tennessee job. That was floated by Kelly's agent, Trace Armstrong, and Tennessee wasn't actually considering Chip Kelly. And if you remember, and I don't do the see, I told you stuff, I told you so stuff a lot, but I did tell y'all back then, both on SEC Country Live and on Dog Nation Daily, that Chip Kelly as a coach in the SEC was not going to happen, that it was all just, you know, theatrics, that he's not made for the SEC, doesn't have the personality for SEC-style recruiting, and this was all just a game. Leverage for the SEC schools like Florida to hire who they wanted to hire, leverage for him to kind of be in the mix for jobs. The people that work with Chip Kelly in Philadelphia will tell you this is not the kind of personality that would have survived in the SEC. These text messages sort of prove that. Mike Leach wanted the Tennessee job, according to these text and email exchanges. That's not really a surprise. One of the reasons I believe that Curry got fired is because of being mixed up with a guy in Leach, who I think a lot of administrations would have viewed as unhireable, given his past at Texas Tech. That's kind of an ugly situation there. And also, another guy who doesn't come out of this sort of looking great is current Florida coach Dan Mullen, who was having conversations with Tennessee about its coaching opening the day before his team lost as a big favorite to Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. Now, there's no, you know, way to say that's the reason why Mississippi State lost. After all, Nick Fitzgerald did get hurt during that game, but not a great look from Mullen either. So, pretty juicy stuff. Certainly sort of ignites, though, a rumor mill. And the Tennessee situation, we find out just how ugly all this really was. All right, let me go through quickly here a few things. Gus Malzahn has updated Jarrett Stidham's status. You can read about this at SECCountry.com. Stidham, who has not gone through the early stages of Auburn spring practice, is back throwing again. This is pretty much as it was predicted to be. He's going to be fine. That shoulder is healing, and he's now throwing just a bit. Tua Tagovailoa was also at Alabama practice yesterday. AL.com reporting that he was doing some stuff off to the side, not officially going through the real practice work. It almost seemed like, according to their description, that he was trying to figure out how much he could grip the football. He obviously sprained his thumb earlier in the week. He's going to be fine as well, but it does sort of get some attention when he misses practice. And last story I want to get to here. How about Kentucky last night? Now, we don't do a ton of basketball for the SEC through, but the Atlanta Regional was wide open for them with Nevada and Loyola being the one game. All you got to do is beat Kansas State, and you're a game away from the Final Four, and they couldn't even do that. Honestly, I don't know how Kentucky fans can stomach John Calipari right now. Bringing in talent year after year but not getting to the Final Four, that is not a good look for Kentucky, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, as we wrap up our program today, hope you are all getting ready for a great weekend. I understand here in the Atlanta area where I live, it's supposed to rain a good bit, so wherever you are, hope it's going to be dry and warm, and if it's not, well, you can find something fun and to do in the meantime. Of course, we'll be back next week for more Dog Nation Daily with more of a Georgia spring practice coverage. Look forward to giving you that. Before we do, though, and say goodbye for the weekend, let me give you a couple things here. Our Gator Hater Countdown, you know, we believe that good Georgia fans are supposed to be Gator haters first and foremost. We think that's supposed to be Georgia's number one rival. It is here on this program. That's why we do the Gator Hater Countdown every single day on Dog Nation Daily. And 218 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville. We think they get another win against the Florida Gators, and we'll be just as happy then as we were this past October when it happened for 2017. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. We will have a daily double today, by the way. We're going to have that up for you at the forum at forum.dognation.com. Check that out. We'll see you Monday here on Dog Nation Daily.